Well, good morning. I'm so glad you're here. Come on in. My name's Nathan. This is Emmaus Church, and we are 20 years into the pursuit of a spirituality that makes a difference in real life, and so I'm really glad you've joined us for that. Raise your hand if you'd like to get a Bible. You need a Bible today. Thanks for bringing them up here. We're going to read a whole chapter of Mark chapter 5. I mean, a whole chapter of Mark. It's chapter 5. And it will be it's too much to put on the screens. That's the bottom line. So raise your hand, get a Bible, the sermon notes page. That'll help you follow along, give you a place to write some things down. If you're seated on my right and there's a basket under your seat, can you hand that down? We also believe that a spirituality that makes a difference in real life happens in community. And so if you'd like to hand off contact information, you're welcome to do that through one of these cards. You can put the cards in the boxes by the doors as you leave today. But wherever you are today, our hope is that this will be a place where you can experience the Lord, where you need to experience the Lord, where you can go at a speed that is authentic and honest. And I just hope this is a really encouraging morning. Thanks for joining us online. If you're here with us in that way, praying for you wherever you are. All right, we are preaching through the Gospel of Mark, and it is a fast-paced, action-packed record of the life and teachings of Jesus. The series is called The Stronger One, which refers to Jesus, of course, and his power over every adversary, over every obstacle that he faces. I really need to be able to talk fast today, so let's get there. Jesus is undefeated. In every contest, he's the stronger one. In fact, his strength or his power or his authority seems to be, in the minds of his early followers, both a source of amazement and bewilderment. For example, chapter 4 of Mark's gospel ends with Jesus and his disciples in a boat at night, struggling to cross a large lake in the middle of a storm. The disciples are pulling at the oars. They are pretty sure they're going to drown, but Jesus is sleeping. And in desperation, or maybe a bit of frustration, the disciples wake Jesus up, and this is their line: "Don't you care if we drown?" And Mark records, Jesus got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Be still." And then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. And he said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And presumably goes back to sleep. And now the disciples, who were afraid, Mark says, are terrified. And they asked each other, "Who is this?" Even the wind and the waves obey him. And that's the big question in the Gospel of Mark. It's, who is this? Who is this Jesus? And Mark, in chapter 5 alone, which we'll read today, takes note of a wide range of responses and reactions to Jesus. In fact, I counted 20 different reactions to Jesus in Mark chapter 5 alone, which I think reflects the reality that most people early in the gospel still don't know the answer to the "who is Jesus" question. In Mark 5, some people come to meet Jesus. Some people fall on their knees in front of Jesus. Some people shout at Jesus. Some people beg Jesus. Some people are attracted to Jesus. Some people are afraid of Jesus. Some people plead with Jesus to leave. Other people ask him if they can come with him. Some people obey Jesus, some are amazed at Jesus, some gather around Jesus, some plead earnestly with Jesus, some follow Jesus, some just hear about Jesus, some come up behind Jesus, some touch the cloak of Jesus, some think they'll be healed by Jesus, some tell the whole truth to Jesus, some laugh mockingly at Jesus, and some are completely astonished by Jesus. So many varied responses to Jesus in one chapter of the gospel. Chapter 5 includes three stories. We're going to cover all of them. A story about a Gentile, that is a non-Jewish man who is possessed by demons. That's the first. A story about a leader of the Jewish synagogue whose daughter is dying. That's the second. And a third story about a woman whose life has been devastated by a 12-year illness. Three very different stories, very different situations, totally different details. In fact, Jesus' instruction in each of the stories is also different. So we should be careful not to turn any one of these stories into a formula. There is no sort of one-size-fits-all. But Mark is providing another compelling series of events or stories for us to consider in order to answer the main question of his gospel, which is, who do you say Jesus is? So we're going to read the whole chapter today, which is way too much to handle in detail. So I want to invite you today to stand back like you're watching a rock skip across a lake. And don't worry too much about the individual details. You can talk about those in your home groups this week or around your dinner table. But I want to invite you just to stand back and try to notice the pattern. Just stand back and notice the pattern, because amidst all the differences in the stories that Mark records, there emerge a few big picture consistencies that reveal more of the truth of who Jesus is. And it's this consistent pattern that emerges through these stories that I think is what Mark really wants us to see. So we'll read the story, Mark chapter 5. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and he broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." And then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on a nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. And the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed.
When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him.
A large crowd followed and pressed around him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered. "And yet you can ask, 'Who touched me?' But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering."
While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus to the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders to not let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat.
Amen. Thank you. Amen. Thank you both. So Mark records this question at the end of chapter 4. Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. And those who ask the question, they're terrified, right? Who is stronger than the forces of nature? And so then here's these three stories, which Carmen and Melissa and I just read. These are the answers to the question. Mark tells a detailed story about a man possessed by a legion of demons, shows how Jesus is stronger than the dehumanizing force of evil. And then Mark tells a story about a chronically bleeding woman and shows how Jesus is stronger than debilitating, ostracizing, poverty-inducing disease. And then Mark tells a third story about an influential man whose daughter is dying and then dies and then shows how Jesus is stronger than even death. So Jesus is stronger. That's the drumbeat of chapter 5. Jesus is stronger. Jesus is stronger. Jesus is the stronger one. But there's more of this pattern that's emerging. In these three very different stories, I see three consistencies. The people are different, the details are different, but three things at least remain the same in each of the three stories. First, there's a consistency in the situations that these stories involve. The situations are different in most ways, but what they have in common, friends, is each one of these situations is totally beyond hope. The situations in each story are beyond hope. The people in these situations are out of options. Their situations are totally hopeless. Nobody can fix this. Nobody. No one can bind the man who lives among the dead. No chains can hold him. No irons can restrain him. He is unhindered destruction personified. This is like the oxy addict who has moved on to heroin, who is now rolling the dice with fentanyl. This is a shell of a man. He is controlled by a self-destructive power that nothing can subdue. And when people see this man, they don't see a man anymore. They just see chaos and evil. This isn't a difficult situation. This is an impossible one. And no one can heal this bleeding woman. She has, quote, suffered a great deal under many doctors who are apparently just experimenting with best guess remedies. She spent all that she had, yet instead of getting better, she's grown worse. And it's been 12 years. So this has been like since 2013. This person has been completely debilitated, ostracized. It's gone from a physical problem to a physical financial problem to a physical financial social problem. What's the plan? There's no plan. Because no one can fix this. Nobody has any more ideas. There's nothing more we can do for you. She has no future. Her only option is endless suffering in isolation. When people see this woman, they don't see a woman anymore. They see hopelessness. They see banishment. They see total exclusion for her and anything that she touches. This is not a difficult situation. It is an impossible and hopeless one. And it's not even worth bothering the teacher about the little girl anymore because she's dead. The story is over. Her life is snuffed out at 12. Her whole future unrealized. And so now the house is filled with the wailing of hired mourners, and any thought of hope in this house is mocked as laughable. Jairus' desperate plea for help becomes horrifying despair when he hears the words, "Your daughter is dead." This is not a difficult situation. This is an unthinkable one. The situation is, by any definition, it's just tragically beyond hope. Every situation in the three stories, Mark chapter 5, has this in common. They are all game over hopeless. Okay. So let's just notice this as the part of the pattern. The context in which each of these stories takes place is the darkness of hopelessness. That's the context consistently. But it's not the only thing these stories have in common. There's another thing each of these stories has in common, which is this: into each of these beyond hope situations enters Jesus. Mark 5 is three stories about Jesus entering hopeless situations. Jesus, to whom even the wind and the waves submit. So these impossibly hopeless situations get disrupted, and the equations are altered, because hopeless plus Jesus equals hopeful. So it's different now. And more specifically, here's what Jesus does in each of these situations. He demonstrates compassion and strength. Jesus says to the desperate, trembling with fear, "Woman, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. Be freed from your suffering." There's compassion and strength as Jesus enters this formerly hopeless situation. Jesus takes the child by the hand and says in Aramaic, the common heart language of his people, "Talitha kaum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up," or "Dear one, I say to you, get up," or taken literally, according to one scholar I read this week, the words are, "Little lamb, rise again." Clearly, Jesus speaks a term of compassionate endearment, followed by a word that is so strong, it gives life to the dead. Compassion and strength. And then even in the story of the demoniac, which just pulses with the power of Jesus, we also see the tenderness of Jesus. There's tenderness for this man. Jesus seems to see the man and the evil, which has possessed him for so long, not as one and the same, but as distinct. He takes compassion on the man. He destroys the evil. And we see this no longer possessed man now in his right mind, and we hear Jesus say, "Go home to your family and tell them how the Lord has had mercy on you." Jesus enters these hopeless situations with compassion and strength. Therefore, they are no longer hopeless. He shifts the equation. There's this beautiful recognition on the part of Jesus, not just of the unique situations, but also of the individual people in these stories. There's no one-size-fits-all cure command. Isn't that incredible? Instead, we see Jesus being moved by compassion over the unique situations that each person finds themselves in, and then responding to these specific and unique kinds of brokenness. He sees the humanity in people who have become unrecognizable as human. And he flexes his power, and the situations that were formerly hopeless now become stories which are unforgettably hopeful. And so as we take note of this pattern, please see this. It's in the situations where human weakness is the most desperate where Jesus demonstrates compassion and strength. So I'm just pointing out three consistencies of these stories. First, in each of these stories, the situation is hopeless. Second, in each of these stories, Jesus enters in, and he brings this situation-altering compassion and strength. And then a third consistency in these stories is this, and let's not miss this. We see each of the people who come to Jesus in these stories fall on their knees before him. What's going on here? I think Mark is revealing reality in a way that I think all people everywhere throughout history immediately recognize, like on a sub-rational level, on like almost a primal instinctive level, when people begin to realize the actual answer to the question, who is this Jesus, they respond by kneeling before him. They bow down, they fall on their knees. When you recognize the truth of who he is, this is what you do. You get low. You bow down. Why specifically do people in Mark's gospel kneel? I don't know. He doesn't explicitly tell us. The demon-possessed man seems to kneel initially out of submission, like a supernatural acknowledgement of a superior power, a recognition, maybe even with some level of resentment. You are Jesus, you are the Son of God, you are the most powerful being here. Jairus, who's the synagogue ruler, where two chapters ago, if you remember, chapter 3, there's a disagreement in the synagogue, Jairus' synagogue, over the fine points of Sabbath theology. And that disagreement is grounds for an assassination attempt on Jesus, but Jairus is on a completely different continent emotionally at this point. He doesn't care what day it is. He doesn't care what the rules say. He is kneeling, it seems to me, out of just desperation, like this unconscious gesture of profound need. Mark writes, he pleaded earnestly with Jesus, my little daughter is dying, please come. And then the woman, instantly healed after 12 years of suffering, she actually kneels after the miraculous healing that she experiences in her body. She's trembling in fear. She's been exposed. She was trying to be discreet, just come up and touch his cloak, but now she kneels before Jesus. She confesses everything. But she seems to bow not out of submission like the demons, not out of humble desperation like Jairus, but she seems to bow just out of reverent worship, overwhelmed with gratitude, overwhelmed with awe, having just experienced the power of God in her body. We could discuss our own theories and the details of these stories, and I'm hopeful that you will this week, but today I just simply want to point out this pattern. Imagine you were there. Imagine all of us were there. We're seated up on some hillside. We're too far away to hear what anybody is saying, but I think we'd still be able to see the pattern emerging in these stories. It would still be obvious to every single one of us who was getting clarity on the actual identity of Jesus. Who was realizing the truth to the question, who is this? We would all understand, even from a distance, who it was because, oh, it's that one right there. It's the one on his knees before Jesus. Oh, there's another one right there. It's the one on his knees before Jesus. Oh, look, there's a third one right there. She's also seeing clearly. She's kneeling before Jesus. Some kneel in fearful desperation because we just need help, and some kneel in grateful awe. It's a gesture, it's an expression of worship. The question, who is this? Even wind and waves obey him. The answer, in the form of these three stories with just three things in common, there's a hopeless situation. Jesus enters it with compassion and strength, and those who recognize the truth fall on their knees. Mark wants us to see this. Mark wants us to wrestle with this. All right, two more quick questions. What is the message of Mark 5? It's teed up by Jesus silencing the storm and asking this question in the stillness at the end of chapter 4. Why are you still so afraid? Do you still have no faith? And the message climaxes as another storm explodes in the mind of a father who's just been informed that his child has died. And Jesus, unfazed, looks at the man as if to steady him and says simply, don't be afraid, just believe. Please hear me. The message isn't that storms don't happen. The message isn't that evil doesn't twist and destroy people. And the message isn't that illness isn't horrible on so many levels, or that death isn't tragic and terrible and real. The message is that Jesus has authority over it all. Okay, that's the message. He has authority over it all. Even death is like sleep to Jesus because he is the giver of life. He is the stronger one. The message to you and me, especially if we're facing situations that feel hopeless, is don't be afraid. Just believe. Second and last question. What do I even do with that? What if I can't just turn belief on like a switch? And what if the truth is I'm actually terrified? I am afraid. What is my response then to this message of Mark 5? I think it is to fall on my knees. It is to say with my body what I don't have words to say with my mouth. It's to fall on my knees. It's not to try to clean ourselves up, because before we come to Jesus, it's to bow before him in brokenness and neediness. Our response is not to try to understand this heavy thing that is happening and try to figure it all out theologically and why did it happen. It's to simply acknowledge this heavy thing is too heavy for me. I cannot lift it. I cannot carry it. And so I just fall on my knees before Jesus. And our response is not to worry about what others might think or what kind of messiness this might create. It's to be bold. It's to be totally honest. I am desperate. I don't know anyone else who can help with this. So I am placing any faith I can scratch up in you, God, and I am falling on my knees before you. I'm just bowing before you. I don't know what else to do. Please show your strength. Please show your compassion in this situation. Please help me to bring my fear to you. Please give me the grace I need to believe. I know I've probably stirred some things up. And I also don't want to sanitize and G-rate this chapter in the Bible. This is desperation at the most extreme level experienced by humans. And so I want to engage it and invite you to as well. I'm going to say a prayer. I'm going to invite Melissa and John to come up and just play and sing and just create some space. And there's no desire at all to manipulate or shape. I'm just trying to create space for us to respond for a few minutes to this, and then we'll move right into communion. And at any time, you are welcome to get out of your seats, to stand in the corners, to kneel. You can come here and kneel if you'd like to before or after you receive communion. Let's just let's ask the Lord to speak to us and to give us the grace we need to respond to his word. Amen. Lord, thank you for your love. I thank you for not one, but three and even more situations or stories of like beyond hope situations. And pray that the awareness of your compassion and love would penetrate our hearts in their fear and in their grief, and that we would respond to you in Jesus' name.